Classical Guitar Insider, this is your host, Brett Williams. The show is sponsored by SavageClassical.com. That's S-A-V-A-G-E Classical.com. Go there and Richard will hook you up with the guitar of your dreams. Just tell him Big Diaper Brett sent you. I don't know if I've called myself Big Diaper Brett in a while. Not to you guys, at least. But yeah, go there. Get somebody a $20,000 guitar for Christmas. Do it. Have fun. Spend it. We're all sitting around again, so it's probably right. I mean, are we okay with this? This is nuts again with this. Now all of a sudden I have to teach online again? If they even want to do online? But I'm vaccinated, but we don't know. I'm Moderna. Moderna's good. So I'm safe and everybody else is not. I don't know. It's too much. I don't want to think about it. I want to talk about it. I just want to go about my business. You know, I got the booster and, you know, I'm not sitting in crowded rooms anymore. But I still don't want to be outside this winter. I don't think I've got that in me. Until they, I'm not a capital terrorist or, you know, rioter or whatever, but I don't know if I want to drink outside every time I'm with a friend. I don't have that in me yet. By the time the next podcast hit, you know, if that's it. I've got the booster. It's a good booster. It's the Moderna booster. I don't want to freak anybody out. But that's what I read today is that my booster is the best and your booster sucks. And and so I am just, you know, I don't have anything in the head anymore that's going to allow me to worry about this. This is just life now. So I'm just going through it. You know, I never thought I was like, oh my God, how am I going to teach with a mask on? All fall long. School's over. I did it. I had the mask on. It was fine. It's a pain in the butt, you know, and your ears hurt and stuff like that, but you find that little part of your ear where it doesn't hurt as much. My ears have this, they're not unusual, but they have the back of the ear and then they have a little bulb and then there's sort of the back of the top of the ear. You know what I'm talking about? So I work my mask. So it's right there. Little pro tip there, you know? But man, you know what I couldn't do? I couldn't like sing along and stuff like that. I could, you know, you just can't breathe. I don't know. What are we going to do? You know what we're going to do? We're not going to talk about it. We're going to talk about Paul Smith. Paul Smith, my old friend from Manus, is on the show. And he's done a lot since we went to Manus. He's done a lot of the things that good people do when they get out. He's worked in high needs districts. Gotten instruments in the hands of people that otherwise wouldn't have access to them. He's working, his current project in Philadelphia is the Pizzicato Players, which is part of the Philadelphia Youth Orchestra, or at least associated with them, where he currently works. And that's something he put together. And I was part of a little symposium where he was working closely and collaborating with Philadelphia area organizations, woodwind organizations and harp organizations that had put together their own little orchestras. And what the Pizzicato Players is it's all plucked instruments. So it's an orchestra for plucked instruments. And, you know, he talks in the show about what kind of benefits he hopes that has for players like us, you know, sort of like a home. Because as we know, you get out and, I can't remember the last time I, you know, spent some face time with another classical guitarist. It's just, you know, it would be great. So obviously we have stuff like that, but this would be more, I don't know. It's just, it's very exciting. And I think he says their first show is coming up. So be on the lookout for that. But he also had an album with, that featured the work of David Loeb, who is a composer at Manus. He's on faculty at Manus. He was there when I was there. So that just came out. It's his first album on Spotify. So, you know, very excited about that. And he's just a really, you know, he's a thinking guy. He's funny. And I've never had anybody from Manus on yet. I haven't had Andy or Giacomo or anybody else on that I went to school with. I don't know if I've had any of it. There's a lot of younger people, but I don't know if they have albums out yet. I'm kind of waiting for that to happen. Because you guys don't need to have albums out, right? You just release it on... we already talked about this ad nauseum, but anyway. So I may have to kind of retool the rule about you need to have a full-length album out, because it's like, well, what is a full-length album? What does that mean? I don't know. We've already talked about this, right? Because I want to talk to some of these younger people. But, you know, this is an exciting time for me. You know, Christmas is exciting for me. I celebrate it. I love it. I love getting presents. Yeah, I like receiving them, but I like just going out and having something to do on the weekends. Oh, I'm going to go out and, you know, get my brother a video game controller or something like that. I forget what I got. I got a board game this year. It's called Space Base. So he's going to play with that. Oh, is that what I got him? No, that's what I got him for his birthday. He's got a December birthday. I'm sorry for the people that have December birthdays. My friend Natalie has a birthday on December 24th. It's awful. She never liked it. Well, so yeah, Paul's on the show. You know, this is a real friend. This isn't like a guy. I kind of like his work, or we made each other laugh once or twice. This is an actual friend. You know, this is a guy who I'm going to know forever. So, you know, we've crashed on each other's couches. We've drank more than a few beers together. So it's really fun. This is exciting for me. It was, yeah, like he was like, can we do it this week? I was like, we can do it right now. I'm sitting here. It's it. I'm done. I had a gig this weekend. I felt a little bit ill afterwards. Of course, I'm like, oh my God, I have. And then all of a sudden I was fine. I was like half a day later, I'm fine. And you can't even get the tests anymore. You just kind of got to live with it. Like I said, I'm boosted. So I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I don't want to buy tests. These other people might really need them. And I can't find them anywhere. Not in New York. So this is a real, what would you call it? I think you would call it a clusterfuck. I'm leaving. I'm going to California in 2 days. Am I? Am I going to be able to do that? I've already got an early flight. How earlier do I need to be? Am I going to have to get up at 2 a.m? This is a disaster. But yeah, I had a little gig and it was so much fun because I got to play my music this time. I know last time I was talking about, I played with the singer. That was fine. But this was like kind of special because I played a lot of pieces in front of people for the first time that had never been played, that I wrote. And it really was surprising. I worked really hard. I visualized a lot. I basically just visualized. That's like my entire practice day was visualization. Visualization, what I do, just so you know, and it works for me, is I say the names of the notes out loud. It's not enough just to be able to picture myself playing the piece. And then, oh, I can't see that. So then you go and you work like that. The more efficient way for me to do it is to say the names of the notes, right? So if I can say the names of the notes, at least just the names of the notes that are in the, you know, active voice. So usually that's the melody, right? If I can say those right before I play them, usually I'm okay. Usually that's what I can do. The real pro way to do it would be to take a measure, say the names of the notes, play the measure. But I kind of say the name of the note right before I do it. Does this make any sense? You guys can email me and tell me what you do, but that's what I do. And it usually, I don't have memory slips that often with things that I'm playing with. So I was pretty amazed at what I can play and what I can't play, or what I could play well and what I sort of struggled with. It wasn't what I thought it would be. You know, and that it's, we're not performing right now. And that's having an effect on us because I've always said this, you don't know whether you can play or not until you are on, you know, until you're playing in front of people. You just don't know. You know, either that or you're making a recording. Those two things will be the gauge by which you can determine whether or not you are effectively performing a piece of music. You know, you just don't know. And even though because of that, I did all that visualization. But even then, afterwards, I got back and I played and I was like, you know what? This piece is like not, I don't know this piece. And then another one, the one that I found incredibly hard to play that I've just been working on for months, for like 3 months, just blasting away with it to the point where I was like, am I going to hurt myself? That one went so, it was so smooth and so easy. Not what I expected. Anyway, that's it. That's what's going on over here. Happy holidays, everybody. If you want to, you know, help me out and throw some of that into your money, I don't know what you can tell your tax guy. Just tell him I donated it to this guy. I don't know if it's, I don't know if I'm charitable donation person. But you can donate to me anyway. I think it's the right thing to do. I think we're doing good work here. So here's my time with Paul Smith. And if you want to do that, you can go to brettwilliamsmusic.com. That's B-R-E-T. Williamsmusic.com and get me some eggnog or something, or some money towards some apple pie or whatever I'm going to be spending money on in the next week or two. All right. Happy holidays, everybody. I'll see you after the new year. Here's my time with Paul. I didn't even know you played video games anymore.
Well, I had, you know, I'm a child of the 80s, right? So 1984. Yeah, how do you not? But I have to put it down because I get too into things. So I have PS4. Which works.
That works great. I'm congratulations. I'm happy for you.
Well, Doom Eternal really should be played on a PC, and I haven't made that jump yet. And once you enter like PC gaming, it's like you're black lights. You're up all night. You're not hitting the gym. You're not practicing.
So anyway, you said it's like music. You said you were born in 1984. That gives us plenty to talk about. You know, 84 was actually my favorite year as a child. I was 8, and I remember I had my first best friend. I got my bike that year. I got an Atari 2600 that year. It was just like the best year ever. And then it was like 1993 after that. And well, nothing's been good since.
What's your car? You know, like they say, like sometimes the car of your year is
Ferrari Testarossa. I think it's I don't know if it's 84, but it's the one with the sides with the, you know, it looks like fingers have been ran through it. It's an 80s Testarossa. What's yours? Nice.
It's probably some sort of T-top Camaro, which is just ridiculous.
Well, I know you used to say your parents were sort of like, you know, Brian Ferry listening. Like, I imagine them driving around in like a Trans Am and, you know, eating pizza as health food and stuff like that.
It's funny. You're the only person in recorded history to reference my parents together in a united phrase. They've been historically... Yeah, that's hilarious.
When did they get when did they bite the bullet? When did they get divorced?
When do you divorce someone? Is it emotionally? Is it trust? Is it legally? Because it's quite complicated.
Paul through everything horrible while that's happening.
It was completely shitty. I think it was 11th birthday, so 95 is when the separation happened, and that was done like, "Hey, come home for dinner. Get in this car." I never went back home, never saw any student from sixth grade again, never stepped foot in my house. I left an entire life behind. Boom, 11 years roasted. That teaches you how to like get on your grind and figure out what's important in life, because it can be taken away, you know.
What happened? So you're 11 years old. That's traumatizing. Just from working with kids, I know that like that age group, if something happens then, it's really upsetting. I mean, just like that's when they're starting to figure out like friendships, and they're starting to be left out of things, and people are starting to be mean, and all that horse shit's going on. And then that happens to you. And what happens? You get uprooted by one of the parents. Is that what happened?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously like rift had formed, and there's always this, you know, Bukowski would say, be careful when you bend over, because a broken shoelace will put a man to the madhouse. You don't know what is the straw that breaks the carrot's back. When the camel's back breaks, we just departed. So we went to like a friend, you know, there's no support network sometimes for parents, for them to turn to. So it was just like a bail situation. And then just like a series of moves through indefinite school districts, public housing, complete uncertainty. And then stabilization in like the eighth grade. So like you have all of middle school was just like a wash. So it just, you know, and it's an ACE score, right? The adverse childhood experience score. So for, you know, trauma-informed practices, you know, what's kind of emerging more in the teaching artistry field is that, you know, you've got a list. So if your score is like, out of 10, like 7, 8, that's a lot of adverse childhood experiences. So like we can go through the list. It's divorce, there's prison, there's drug abuse, there's any history of any mental disease in a family. So you start checking, you know, abuse, start checking these things off, and you're like, oh, I grew up in a crazy house.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, okay, well, let's come to terms with that. And if life is so short and if everything can be taken away from you, that's exactly the kind of person that Sallie Mae wants to take out a bunch of private loans. So follow your dreams and call Sallie Mae and go through that whole debt situation, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But at the time, it was like you're looking down the barrel of a gun saying,
What a great point. You're exactly right. I mean, it's the thing is that it's, you know, we talk about the army being that way, but it's like, what about college? What about music school? You know, I'm still in debt. I'm 44. What the fuck? But it's like these colleges, I'm just like, what is costing so much money? You know, a lot of these places are just like old shitty buildings.
I'll tell you.
And what these costs teachers anything, are just right? like, but you know, alcoholics, you know, it's like, what's the problem here? People are just coming in, getting a per diem, you know, what is it? The salary of the, whatever it is, the deans or whatever. Anyway,
no. So you've got an arms race. Where you talk about education, we're talking about an arms race in marketplace. And marketplaces exist whenever there's a problem to solve. And I think musicians should understand that utility solves problems, makes money. That's just this is a facet of business. But we can get into that subject for sure. We'll look under the hood. But in terms of like. You do have to, I think sometimes I get down on myself and down on the system. I'm a huge critic. I'm the first one there.
Yeah.
Like if I could go to court and file, I would do it and just make a grand scene of all these accusations. But I think you get a choice, right? Like you have a life, you can sign up to be somebody. And like, I'm 38. I look at my 18-year-old self and I go, wow, you keep at it. Like, that's the thing. Don't let the sound of your own wheels drive you crazy is the thing. It's like, how do you go the distance, not burn out, not get frustrated and get back on your horse? And like, I'm in a really happy place now. So like pandemic was a huge reset, 2019 January, actually before it kicked in, 2019, 2020 season. And just like that Glenn Kurtz wrote that giant book about practicing. What does it mean to do the craft and be centered? And you pay all this money to be around top shelf performers. And the idea is that like the cost of that education is going to give you precedence for the rest of your life. So you're never under the water when you meet, you know, the gunslingers, and that your foundation is that. So it's a double-sided coin with me.
Yeah, I agree.
I see the value, but and the next day I'm cursing it. So like it's very, very close, but I just bought a home 37 and
cool.
We squawked through, we got it, but it was never guaranteed. And in growing up, I never thought that was going to be an option because of the dedication to the loans and saying this is the way, this is the only way I can do it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely tough, you know. And I've talked about sort of the predatory nature of some of these programs, and you know, it just doesn't need to be that expensive. It's as simple as that. It's like, of course you need these skills. I'm not saying that we don't need to be around, and I'm not saying that all the teachers are alcoholics. They probably can't even handle one drink, to be honest with you. But the thing is that it just doesn't need to cost, you know, $60,000 a year or whatever it is now.
Well, no, I mean, there's different models. Like Curtis has like Transylvania money.
We bitched about it, and all of a sudden now we're starting to go like, oh, actually those contacts allowed us to, you know, make Dunut Philly, and
I spin my head.
I go back and forth. I was just thinking about Fred today and how I need to call him since he retired, and you know, all these other things that, you know, you have nice feelings, bad feelings, but isn't that the way it is in any relationship, an intimate relationship like the one we're in with this industry and with this instrument, you know?
Well, I mean,
you've gone
back,
a completely different, you've gone all sorts of different directions. And in particular, you spent the last 10 years really focusing on, working out with other kids that went through a situation similar or elevated from yours. So Tune Up Philly is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's at least affiliated with this journey that you began pretty much, you know, a year or two after you finished grad school in New York, you know, you moved away from us, you moved to Goodbye Polly, and then you moved over there and you started working with high needs kids. And, you know, was that sort of coming off of the heels of your upbringing or that experience?
Yeah, it's super close. I mean, we can paint the scene of like post grad life in New York, and kind of the issues are, is you're trying to catch lightning, right? You're trying to find where you're going to spend your time and how you're going to be supported in New York, which is is always an expensive place, and it doesn't get cheaper. So I spend most of my time teaching in Upper Bergen County, Oradell, New Jersey.
Oh, that's right. That's
teaching
right.
50 yeah. guitar students a week, like a machine, just crushing it with my good friend from Moscow, Ilya. And we would stay up late Friday nights and tie one on and wake up at 8 and drive over together listening to death metal and going to Bergen.
Oh, yeah, that guy was a beast. That guy used to drink vodka and go back in and practice.
This is, you pay for these experiences, and now, like,
he's a pianist. Yeah,
he's a concert pianist. Now he's in Boston, and Ilya Kazantsev, and then, of course, the Ilya Yakushev. They're all over the place.
That's my guy. Yakushev's the blonde one, right?
Yeah, he's definitely the Bond villain.
That guy.
Leather jacket.
Hey, Brit. Yeah. They all had like the jackets and the hair and the cigarettes and the vodka and the practicing 10 hours
a day.
Well,
what's interesting about that, sorry to jump in, but you know, the Moscow approach, like once you hit a certain grade, you're on the train to the conservatory, which means you're not doing pre-algebra, algebra, calculus, world history, handwriting, economics, literacy, like all these other topics are pushed aside so that you can represent the state and shred. And they do shred and they do represent, but that's how much it takes. That's the world stage, is like state-sponsored shredding.
So they sort of have this this sort of like pastoral sort of, you know, approach to life where everything's, it's just very simplified. You know what I mean? They're really smart and everything like that, but they're also just like, like getting hammered and practicing hard. And listening to like shredding metal on their way to go teach in Bergen.
The full-on American experience. Well, so meeting up with my high school little sweetie Erin, you know, she came up to New York, and we married in 2012, and so coming back here was more like quality of life to Philadelphia was quality of life. Can we transition to a place where I don't have to park three subway stops away and then take the subway home? I mean, it's just getting to be really tough, like, to just keep your cool, right?
Yeah.
So Philly was like open, you know, it was a bar scene in 2008, 2010, very heavy. Great.
Yeah, I visited you. We had the best times. I think I visited you twice, and both times were like, I mean, I tell everybody Philly's one of my favorite cities, and a lot of that is because of you and Erin showing me around and just going to the, you know, going out.
So they have space. Yeah. I mean, Philly has space, and like the rent was manageable, and like you can achieve different things. And I still hadn't sold my soul back to working in a car dealership or library or whatever other position I was prepared to take because of the opportunities in front of you. And Philly's a very different scene, very old school, very orchestral dominant. So I started working in South Philly in the, in a summer camp. So I was going to ask you about Camp Linden. Is it Lindenmere?
Yeah, that's I'm in Pennsylvania at Lindenmere in the summers. Yeah.
So I love teaching youth, you know, because they're receptive. I mean, okay, try teaching 50 adult guitar students. Try teaching 50 youth students. Which one are you going to pick?
Youth. No question about it. I've tried with the amateur adults, and boy, man, it's just a lot to unpack there.
Well, because they put these aspirations, and sometimes I say, you know, like, you've always got to have goals. But when you're an adult, those goals don't really seem that satiating anymore because you have a different hierarchy system. So I will teach anyone, but I have rules to my teaching, and children really fill that mold. I mean, so teaching South Philly, but there was no budget for a music program. I had $300 for supplies. So I had a couple guitars, a couple drums, a couple pitched instruments. I put on ad hoc musicals, but we also did, kid stuff like Water Ice down at the Phillies game. and doing dodgeball in the gym. And
what's water ice? What is water ice?
Water ice. Yeah, it's shaved ice and flavored syrup.
Oh, okay. Like, well, we call that in California maybe a snow cone.
Snow cone would definitely be one. I think in Philly, a snow cone is totally different.
Oh, okay.
It's all water ice.
Water ice. Water ice, that's right. Water, so yeah, that's so much fun. Okay, so you start out that's really shaking. That's really doing it. And the summer camp was the same sort of situation because, you know, you get a budget, you buy what you can, you train your very young staff to do what they can, you know, and at the end of it, you're just like, holy shit, we did it. You know, there's concerts and there's recordings and everybody's going home with a new skill set. And that's it. No better, you know, way to spend a summer, for me at least, at this point. You know,
if you look at quality of life, if you're engaging with if you're developing a community, if they're developing a home for you, if you're getting traction with your students and the economy is supporting you, that's a win in the performing arts. And I think too often, entrepreneurially, it gets overlooked because, you know, working with TuneUp is extremely dedicated out of school time venture from the youth orchestra, which is now the PYO Music Institute, in order to connect with the city kids proper, because you may live like half a mile from all these riches and resources, but the way life works in the city is, you know, mom's is busy. You're not going to go out at night. You're not going to travel past, you know, everyone's in their ruts. So making yourself useful, whether it's a summer camp or other, what's the need that you're solving? Like, is it changing lives? Which music can, certainly. I mean, summer camp probably sounds amazing. I wish I would have had that experience where you can, like, I mean, it's like 8 weeks, right? 8-12?
Well, mine's like 9. It's too long, you know? So it's a really long time, but it's, yeah, and also it's a completely different experience because a lot of the kids are super wealthy. So it's, you know, I mean, there's that. And that's sort of where I've ended up working in New York after my experience in the Bronx, which was probably more akin to what you experienced. And I just, for me, it was really tough to sort of, I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, this is all I'm going to do. But you were doing an after-school program in Pennsylvania, right?
So just doing some random teaching in 2010 and then summer camp in the summer of 2010, 2011. And then
you were doing summer camp?
Yeah.
Oh, you were doing like a city, a day camp.
Yes. The city version of it. Yeah. Yeah.
No, which is cool. There's not, I mean, it's fine. It's great because you get to stay home.
You get to stay home. but also you deal with, you know, there's some, the city kids need so much because I think the elephant in the room is like, does a blocked concrete jungle really facilitate everyone's needs? And this, I mean, no, I mean, the students need such individualized attention at some point in their life, they got to get it from somewhere.
Right.
So, well, and then of course our friend Delia, who was in our Pizzicato Players Symposium, was drafted to lead this program with the youth orchestra and swooped me in because of the work that I was doing. She was like, oh, he lives here. He's doing the credible work. He's doing the whole program. He can handle this. It's super intensive. Like New England Conservatory has launched in years past fellowships for El Sistema Inspired Training, you know, fellowships with Dr. Abreu and the Venezuela system. But I'm American through and through. So I think it's great to have a Viennese system or a Venezuelan system. I brought it up before, state sanctioned practicing. Moscow had it, Venezuela had it. So how does a city do it? Well, you've got to have strategic plans. You got to have buy-in from your community. You've got to have a team and a board around an organization. So that's what I think the toolkit for many guitarists is missing, is that for orchestral players, it's a given that there's a community behind every note. I mean, you ask a cellist to play a note after a break time on stage, it's not happening if they're in a full-time orchestra. You know, ask the orchestral players if they want to wear something different in the next costume, and you've got 3 subcommittees that have to approve all the minutes. So what I'm saying is that is an American CEO business mentality in a way, and the guitarists are not really in that conversation. We're sort of left on the fringes of society to chop up our scraps, and that's why we become so wily. That's why we're composers and conductors and teachers and players, and we wear these, you know, differentiated hats because that's survival for us. But I think we can teach the orchestral community so much about music and vice versa.
Well, that's what your symposium was on last year that I sat in with you on. And that was the you know, when you were talking about that as sort of being, how are we going to do this, and getting together with players, not just guitarists, actually not many guitarists at all, but we're really picking the brains of these people that have experiences with this infrastructure and trying to see how we can relate that or reconcile that with the, you know, sort of isolation of the way that we do things.
Yeah. And people don't get to hear the splendor of like 12 guitars at once. Like, so 12 guitars at once, plus two mandolins, two ukuleles, and then two rows of three harps. I mean,
which is what you're trying to do here, right?
Yeah. In February, we have our first recording session. So we've got the guitars and mandolin and ukuleles down. The harps, we're going to partner with a group called Lyra Society, and they work with the Philadelphia Orchestra. So
that's right. Yeah.
So we're partnering instead of reinventing the wheel every time, you know, making the business handshake happen.
Amazing.
Which I think needs to happen so much more in our field. And the conversation, we talk about expensive schooling. You know, there's no sports science behind the physiology to our discipline. I'd love to see that, and that would be worth the cost. And then the post degree curation, like, hindsight is 2020, but the last thing they want to hear about is how completely off the mark their school is. They just need to appease the accreditors, you know, the accreditation system. So
they,
like,
gotta get people in and out. 4 years, give us the money, go on your way. Then we'll ask you for more money after you're gone.
And raise it a substantial endowment off of all of that work that the students do, by the way. So it pales in comparison to NCAA practices, but they're fundraising on the backs of the students. So I would imagine that they should be held accountable for things down the road. I mean, good luck finding that conversation. That's why they change deans every 3 or 4 years to get them out of there, get them back in the bunkers.
Right. Yeah. Make sure, get somebody new up who we can tell what to do.
Yeah. And who's not going to be so completely insane by the system that they make a mistake and say that this is all a magic scam.
Right. Yeah. No, you have talked about the fact that there is just sort of a, you know, we tell people, we're going to give you the skills to play scales, and we'll give you maybe two. If you're lucky, you're going to get two box suites out of this. And then, you know, you'll figure it out. And it's like, well, what isn't there more to it than that? Not just, you know, business-wise. It's not like we're sitting there, we're going like, I wish I'd learn more about business. No, this is an artistic situation. You know, how are we going to make these, you know, without these contacts, without my time with that quartet that I had, I would have been a completely different person and really sort of lost in space as to exactly what it takes to make an ensemble click, how it works, what the expectations are of career, you know, players, whether it be a clarinet player or an accordion player, or all the other people that I got to work with and all the people you got to work with, all the people you've been talking to. And that conversation we had last year, you had the head of several societies. You were talking about the Lyra Society. You had the head of the Woodwind Society, the saxophone guy. You had what's his name that's up here that also is a woodwind player?
Javier Oviedo with the Classical Sax Project.
Right. So you can't tell me that that's all business. No, you're talking to other artists. You're talking about collaborations on a grander scale. And now it's only been a year, and since then, you're now having your first concert in February, which is just, I mean, that's unbelievable. This was all just being spoken of. There wasn't even really personnel involved. And within a year, you've now, this is coming to fruition. This is actually going to happen.
Yeah, I've invested. So this summer, after the, you know, schools were closed, I started students in the summer. I start 6 students every 3 months, and it's a cycle until I run out of guitars. So what I created was, and I did this lecture for YOLA, for the El Sistema Symposium Take a Stand, which was entitled Graphic Pathways. So I have this, you know, I have a guitar book, and I put stickers on the guitar, and I walk them through some general terminology, but it's a pathway to standard notation, but it's also a pedagogical cap. And so it gets the fingers smart, it gets identity up, it you pick a bunch of pieces that work well with all that stuff. You set it up to be a community experience, and then you differentiate. So yeah, it's definitely artistic, but I also think that it speaks to, like, what's this, like, I was going to ask you about the Segovia model. Like, the Segovia model is what I'm understanding were to have launched the discipline, the educational pursuits, and the standing of the instrument in its place in what we call classical music. But that in itself was a novelty. It was new, and therefore it had intrigue. And then ever since then, everyone's chasing the dragon to be the novelty when it's the standard. So guitar loves novelty. I was just watching 281 albums by Buckethead. I mean, you know, Buckethead, he's kind of a novelty, but hey, he's got an output, he shreds. People are interested in Buckethead. I don't make Buckethead albums, but he's made 281 and he has a following. So Buckethead also did something with Bootsy Collins, right? So what I'm saying is that there is a degree of novelty with the guitar, right? This is a thing with guitar. What's novel about the thing that you're doing? So for me, I was like, well, we're all plucked strings. Wouldn't it be novel if we had a large ensemble that was sort of like, you know, you're talking about Fred Hand, inspired by these, you know, Renaissance consorts, you know, and the Julian Bream influence of getting a band together of plucked strings. And of course, Havanis would always quote Berlioz talking about orchestration of thousands of harps. And, you know, this kind of ties into where David Loeb and his study of Eastern music kicks in. But just saying, like, but I had to put the ensemble on my back, which means like I had to teach all the guitarists. I had to fundraise a touch. I had to get the support, the space, because you need persons, space, you need instruments, you need capacity. So you do need some overhead, but it's clicking along. And I think our focus on recording is what's going to be our longevity, because I think concertizing is for a select few. I think recording is for everyone. So the idea of recording solo, sectional, and then as an ensemble, see, it's tiered. You said leaving summer camp with a CD and some skills. That is like the ribbon on it. Like that's the ribbon on the experience.
Yeah, you and I really had, and I mean, we had the experience of, and I really miss performing. And I think you were a good performer. I think I was a good performer and I really miss it. But when it came down to it, it was really depressing. I remember very clearly coming back from a concert at the Kimmel Center, and I didn't play in the Kimmel Center. I played like in the hallway outside, you know, 2 hours before Yo-Yo Ma went on.
Plaza Stage. We all played the Plaza Stage.
The Plaza Stage. But you do get to use the green rooms, and you know, you have like a person that you can go to. So it's just, you know, you kind of gear up to that. And you take the month and you're like, yeah, I got that. I'm going down to Phil. And you do your smaller concerts and then you do that. And then you're just driving in the bus home and it just kind of sets in and you go like, well, that was that.
Schopenhauer.
Nope, nothing. And I'll just call them in 2 years and see if they want to have me again. And you just, it really is a situation where you just kind of feel like, okay, well, you know, the New York Classical Guitar Society is going to have you play for them once, you know?
And, right. That very know, like, old model.
Right. And it's just like, well, so I really don't get what the deal is. And it really, like you said, it's a for a select few. And I always complain about that. I am so sick, and God bless him, but I'm so sick of seeing Ben Verdery just on every single concert schedule in New York. It's just like, you know, we've seen this guy. He plays 9 times a year in New York, and it's just like, come on, dude, it's ridiculous. It's just so ridiculous. And it's like either that or like a brand new shredder. I don't know. It's just, you know, and I know that I'm bitter because I'm just like, well, you know, when am I up? But it's just like, you know, what are you going to do? So I do think that the thing is that what I do get the most pride out of is, other than like a really well-played concert, which does feel good, especially right afterwards. But I think you kind of have that high and then you come down and you're like, okay, well, what was all that about? But a recording, you really do have forever. And you can just, it's so exciting to release it. And that high doesn't wear off. I mean, I'm still writing mine from like finishing one like over a year ago. And it's just like, you feel so much for that. And you can only imagine what that feels like to like a kid, you know, especially a kid who didn't have access to that kind of technology 6 months ago. And all of a sudden they're just, you know, it's so exciting.
Well, look, there's so much to unpack with that last diatribe. I mean, one, people who...
I'm kind of going off, but, you know, I think this is what we do.
Yeah, but there's interesting things. One, people who are in a position to be extremely visible usually don't require the economic necessity to be stuck in a gig invisible. Therefore, they propagate the scene, and it's because of the insert trust fund, insert full-time gig, insert spouse's job, insert scenario where an artist is totally liberated to be completely available and visible. And those people dominate the infosphere. God bless them.
You know, back to what you just said. You said completely liberated to be visible.
Of course.
And that doesn't come free.
Well, I wasn't until I was 18, until I realized things like, you know, the phrase like spouse of a dentist, spouse of a lawyer. There are people who, and I learned you learn this young. There are people who have businesses and practices and pursuits that have no economic foundations, that they are projects. So think about that. Right. When you're young, you think that store must have supply and demand and cost and overhead and be supplying a full hourly rate to its employees.
Yeah, the candle and muffin store.
Nope. All of Brooklyn is a project. It's a personal pet. I'm kidding. I love Brooklyn.
No,
you're
not kidding. You're exactly right. I complain about it all the time.
So you can't
just make chocolate for a living, you know.
It's artisanal denim chocolate. It's been in the it's been in the denim before and after the cooking process.
Yeah, I did some focus groups. People like chocolate
and denim and use denim
and denim. That's right, denim. It's true. It's true. I like Brooklyn, but I hate it as well. And I like my friends, but I hate them as well.
God bless them.
Just like you. Just like you. Yeah, I mean, you're the same as me in that sense. It's just like we can find something. There's this game that I was playing the other night where you basically weren't allowed to talk about something you liked. We were drinking and we only were talking about bands and music. And it didn't matter who the band was or what it was. You had to find what you didn't like about it.
What don't you like about Doja Cat?
I don't know. Yeah. Is that a coin? Is that Doja coin? Or Doja what's Cat? Doja Cat?
You don't
what's
know that? Doja Cat?
Well, you're younger. You're the cool guy. Tell me what a Doja Cat is.
Doja Cat. She did that song Moo. Bitch, I'm a cow. Moo. You didn't see that? It's fucking hilarious. It's great.
Okay. I'm going to do it. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
I'm going to make a succinct point about this from I don't want to be too much of an intellect here. Classical music in the performing arts is a 1% endeavor, statistics and persons involved. So whatever. It's over here.
Sure. Yeah, the real issue. Let it be. Yeah, right.
It's going to be populated by the haves, and it's going to be pushed around, and it's going to play its games and produce a bunch of flute players who can't get orchestra jobs. And they have to do things like be a flute choir, right? Which has merit. As evidenced by Mr. Glenn, my fantastic mentor.
Yeah, Glenn, that's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
But the point is that it doesn't, what bothers me more is the radio and the commercial music. Because if you think about what happened to your life, there's two ways you get music. One is repetition, two big ways, like repetition. So you learn all that video game music and you're thinking you kids light up when you play video game music, not because of the quality of the composition, because of the ingrained Pavlovian response, right? Like that. I know that I play that all the time, and you're playing it hundreds of hours, and that music just sits there. The second thing is what's marketed to you. So most people's personal preferences in music, and I identify with this music, and I enjoy this music, and I'm such an aficionado, comes from a marketplace, which is business, which means they're fed it and they buy into it, which means that their tastes in music are controlled by economy. So they're just customers. So to me, recording is a focal point of the future, because if you can break that cycle and say, you're in charge of your music making. Yes, you can play music. You can play the Eagles. You can play Doja Cat. I listen to everything. It's great. But shouldn't rob you from being a musical participant in the cosmos. Like in the universe, you should play music. And I have 1,000 reasons why. It's so good for you to play a little bit. But the music industry, it kind of eats up that space in your head, that desire for music. And you just go, I'll just put my headphones on and I'll fill it that way by cramming music into my ear, just like people cram calories. I mean, I think the health of our ears is something that nobody talked about ever. And I have 2 degrees.
Nobody. What are you talking about, the health of your ears? What do you mean? You mean just like the actual, like, not being able to hear well anymore? Or do you mean?
I believe that the ear very comfortably understands SATB ranges, and that the harmonic and melodic functions are different SATB wise, and that you can train your ear to hear four pitches and go DF sharp AC. That's what that is. And the other person can hear the same thing and go, I don't know what you played at all. So the ability to identify pitches, we're in a fixed tone world now, finally. The ability to hear and have an internal ear is some sort of muscle. I mean, to dictate, to have rhythms, to solfege, to spit out four-part harmony, to dictate, to write in your head is some chess-like muscle up there where you either have it or you don't, right? I mean, that's dictation. Needleman, remember that guy?
Uh-huh. Needler.
The Needler. Oh, yeah. My favorite weapon. Back to Halo.
I don't think I ever had him.
He was very cruel, and he had a three absence policy.
This is a theory teacher at Manus who was just like traumatized by somebody coming out of his class. It was always quiet, and he always had a good run-in with him because I don't think I ever studied with him, and I was in grad school, so he didn't do that much. With the grad students, is that right?
Mei Mei Meng taught intro, remedial, rhythm, and if you failed that class, you could not continue at Manus. Now, that's something that I appreciated because it said if you couldn't get yourself through this Hindemith book at an appropriate public level with conducting and solfege, you're not going to school here. That was upheld. People withdrew. Same thing with Needleman, but if you had three absences, if you missed class, and you showed up, he'd be like, what are you doing here? You failed. You have to take summer school and charge you thousands of dollars.
That's what he would do. If you were late, he wouldn't let you in. Is that what he did?
You failed his class. Yeah, because you didn't listen to the rules.
I don't remember. I just remember a lot of sad faces.
Like, it's hilarious.
Like someone like, I don't want to name his name, but you know the guy who like I don't like, you know?
Yeah.
Who's younger than me. You know that guy? There's not many of us, but you know, that were around at that time. Well, actually there's a couple of people, but it's like, I think he was always, whining and in trouble.
Yes. But it's lessons. I mean, like, you know,
yeah, right.
When you start to deal. So we talked about,
by the way, that guy has nothing to do with music anymore. Nothing.
It happens. Well, I think that's a shame. Like, cause music's supposed to be able to last you until you die. You should have a very healthy relationship with this discipline. All the way to your deathbed. If your fingers crack, you can coach, compose, and teach and do other things. Or you might have seasons of music where you go in and out of different things. And the thing about like performing is it's all about training peaks. It's all about sports science. Like it's so seasonal. And we talked about this one time before that it's like pitching major league level. I mean, absolutely. When do you peak? When do you rest? How is it going? Are you going to blow out that you're going to get Tommy John's this year? Like, what is going on? It is so important. I see so many musicians get crumbled because they get caught up in this Needleman thing. And like that takes up more time than the sports science on their hand, you know, which is just like, that's why I just push classical music to the 1%. And I go, well, it's a 1% endeavor. So your margins are that small.
Go ahead. I mean, you seem to be talking a lot about sports science and what's going on there? Have you been looking into that more and we talked about, you know, you got a new guitar recently and you were talking about the sort of the negative effects that some of these cheaper guitars are having on our hands. And I play like a Cordoba that I teach with and the action on it is super high. And, you know, I am teaching a lot and, you know, it does, does hurt, you know, after a while. And you seem to be sort of zoned in on this, the physical relationship that you're having with the guitar right now. What's going on with that? Are you having problems that you've been looked at, that you've been looking at to solve?
So here's a quick recap. I mean, I had a wonderful student guitar from Aaron Green, 2004 Spruce, Cedar, very dark. I don't even know what my woods are made of, because now I have a Spruce, so I've got the dark side and the light side. But it's a great instrument. It records very well if you're close miking. Projection was subnominal, and the left hand was a little harder. But what I found was the spacing. So I finally, we're back to economy. I was able to purchase what I consider to be a concert guitar. Steve Porter, 2018, it's his Quantum model. He's in Mendocino, California. It just has all the hallmarks of a modern instrument with, like, you've got lattice soundboard with carbon fiber supporting and rods. Yeah. You've got elevated fretboard so it doesn't touch the soundboard. You've got sound ports. You've got 12 holes in my bridge, which drives me crazy. Drives me crazy tying carbon strings.
Why are there 12 holes in the bridge?
Because you have to loop it, because you get to loop it.
Oh, I get it. Oh, yeah, I have that too. Yeah.
There's 18 holes now. There's 18 hole bridges. Why?
They just don't want you to have to tie it. I think they're afraid of, like, the buzzing that happens when you start making those knots. And it's kind of a silly thing to worry about. It's not a real problem. You know?
So I get this guitar, and I had a wonderful experience at the Philly Classical Guitar Store with Bill. And, you know, I played the Red Gate. I played some beautiful, you know, top flight models. You know, I don't have Giacomo's, depth with
collection,
his French, you know, his French mystique over there.
Yeah, what's that? Not the Friedrich, but is it?
Yeah. The Friedrich is really crazy. And, those are gems, but you need a guitar that's going to represent you when it comes to playing with orchestral instruments. So projection is just like, you got a list of needs. And so I met the needs and made the investment. Again, still way cheaper than any other classical investment that you'll have to make. You pick the instrument. Guitar always wins. You can always get a guitar that fits the bill way under any classical instrument that fits the bill, so to speak.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. You're talking about violins. You're talking $50,000-$60,000, stuff like that, just to get your foot in the door. Yeah.
Right. So perspective, right? We should understand who our peers are and their support mechanisms. So you get an instrument that is just at a different caliber. I found that what happened was I had this new CD come out. It's the second full
LP. I want to talk about that, you know, but about David Loeb.
So in 2015, I recorded this CD and we shelved it. And I was like, great. And I was looking at obscurity with capital letters. I was doing my community music. I was in the trenches. It was going well. But in terms of, like, classical guitar notoriety.
This is your first album. This is your first album to come out, right?
Second full length. But it's all academic recording. So we'll get to that in a bit, the numerous tales of David Loeb. But you get an instrument. So the point is that I had just reached a point where, and you'll appreciate this, in grad school in New York, I'm taking the best gigs I can find and networking is with people and trying to make everyone happy. So at the end of my Juilliard term, I was playing electric guitar and, like, an Andreessen piece. I was playing Ice, NYU composer's music with a comb in my guitar strings and, like, a drill.
Jesus Christ.
And I was teaching students. And then then I had a jury where I had to do a concerto, a modern piece, and all this stuff,
right,
which was kind of snuck on me. So the point is that when you're pushed to the brink with repertoire and commitments, your hand is the last thing that you may be prioritizing. So what I was able to do is just completely cut off requirements and say, I bow down to no piece. I bow down to no prescription. I have nothing on my agenda. You know, I'm a composer as well. And so I wrote for every other instrument before coming back to guitar, including orchestra and choir. And then I said, I'm going to set my own terms. I'm going to come back to the instrument. I'm going to treat it like a sports science, as in, like, I have seasons. So I'm going to ramp up my muscles. I had pinky flare, you know, where that pinky sticks out. And I attribute that to my interest in harpsichord and piano. I was playing those keyboard instruments, like, vigorously. And I found that Sharon Isbin was right. You can't serve two masters on your right hand. Mm. And once I fixed that, my pinky flare completely subsided. And I said, I know I can fix every problem I saw. So how you get nail curation, get stronger nails, develop your on-ramp system, your intervals. When is your rest week? How are you scaffolding your repertoire? What's concert rep? What's private rep? How do you prioritize your physical technique in a way that you can't do if you have a jury? And because classical music really assumes that you know how to play and that they're all coaches. They're not guitar teachers. They're coaches. And they coach you on the essence of music without being responsible for your technique. That's not their fault. That's the fault of the system. So I think that after having done a complete 2-year rebuild of my hands, I'm in a position to say things like, where's the sports science? If all these cycling people can track every heart rate and watt and work out over 8 hours a week and then integrate rest weeks and judge their output, if you apply those metrics to your practice life, you're going to find out a lot about yourself. And do you write down every single thing that you do in practice over 700 days? You know, so the data, so that's why I say sports science, because sports science represents data, data points, and how that relates to your body and all these tiny muscles that, like, you know, you tell me about focal dystonia and I got so nervous. I don't know how to avoid it. I don't read any sports science journals. I'm just, it's just me and the guitar figuring this out. Which I guess if I was an academic, I'd fix, but what works for me, right? That's the problem. So I don't know. I just thought that all my playing must be so secure and stress-free and fix these imbalances now before I can get back into this. So I went from complete bottom of the barrel to let's try this again. let's try guitar again, you know?
Yeah. And that's what you're doing now.
Yeah. 2 years.
Let's talk about the David Loeb release, because this is sort of, you know, this is your first, at least the first thing that I'm aware of that's come out and been, you know, you've been public about it. You've shared it. You know, this is something that you're proud of, I assume. And, you know, we can talk about your relationship with that and how that album came to fruition.
Yeah. So David Loeb is the Telemann of the Upper West Side. Do you remember this man?
Yeah. He's like tall and weird. Yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, he's allergic to alcohol.
Well, that's okay. That's all right.
He can't be an alcoholic.
Oh, that's right. No, he's not. Well, I didn't mean to say alcoholic. I just meant to say, like, kind of like, you know, weird. Like, I'm just like, what is costing so much money with college?
You mean unbecoming of the cost? To me, weird is a different word. I call it
a lot of guys in old sweaters and bad ties. And I'm just like, obviously, these guys aren't costing you that much money. Can you explain to me why I'm giving you this much money?
Yeah,
that's what I meant with that. Yeah. It doesn't mean that they're bad. It just means that they obviously aren't, you know, reaping the benefits of the millions of dollars that are coming into this institution.
No, it was
every semester.
Was it it was ABC or NBC? The Fleecing of America used to be a segment on the news. It was like, where's the fleece? You know, where's the admin rate coming out of this week? And anywho, yeah. So not to begrudge David. David studied with David Pindar Stearns, who's sort of the old guard at Manus. And what this means is that it's just kind of like establishment New York City composer, which means you have establishment composer who has access to musicians who can get a lot of stuff premiered and has connections to, you know, write orchestral music and get it played, which if you've ever done is ridiculously hard and expensive unless you're hooked up. So right. He's over 50 years at Manus. He taught, and he taught over 25 years at Curtis in Philly. And he puts out like 3 albums a year. He just has invested himself in his pursuit of Eastern Chinese and Japanese mostly,
yeah,
blended styles and traditions. And he's done scholarly articles with, yeah, I think he studied at Columbia and speaks the language. And so his entire MO is, I'm a supported composer, I am a supported artist, and this is my endeavor. And he puts those works out on these, used to be Vienna Modern Masters was the label in Germany. And they went out of print, so that's, it was harder for me to talk about that album. But it did get uploaded to Spotify. So I did, the first album was Asian Fantasias, which is his collection of solo guitar works. Then I appeared on an album called Manus Guitarists, which I don't think you got the memo on, but I played the lyric suite on that one. It was just excerpts, and it was young students. I think Villian was on there. I think Surgeon was on there. Surgeon, remember Surgeon? Croatian.
Kind of. Yeah.
Back like in the ether.
Good play.
Yeah. So, and then this last one was recorded in 2015. And instead of being completely Asian inspired, is inspired from works by this Bohemia Prague early 20th century artist, Jacob Schikaneder, wrote very dark and moving night scenes. So he has this collection called Studies in Darkness, and then a piece after The Old Mill, which his father painted. So his father was an artist, David Loeb's father was. and other pieces inspired from text and sky. So I think the actual album is Landscape Painting Text and Sky is the name
of
the
album. Yeah, I think so, yes.
Which just rolls off the tongue. it's great to type into a search engine because you have to type it perfectly. But this was recorded in 2015, and what I did with both projects was, I mean, I was just so committed to the idea of the process of, in a term, the novelty aspect. As in, if you premiere new music and the composer likes your recording, you have a authoritative recording of that. Congratulations. If you record record the Chaconne, you're probably going to have a variety of benchmarks to achieve, you know, right? I mean,
It's definitely, that's the thing about the Bach and about all that stuff, which I know you're working with now. But it's like, for me, I'm just like, you know, I'm in the middle of life now and I'm just, I don't know if that's, that stuff takes so much time.
Well, I got lucky. Good, I mean, you're right. It takes time, but that got me into Juilliard. I had Suite One and I had Nocturnal and I was in the pocket for the audition. And now when I look back and I go, you know, those Bach suites, what delightful little pieces they are. Look how difficult they are. And what am I going to do with the rest of my life? You have to make those decisions. And I think people come back to them and they cycle in, they cycle out. But I was just so, I talked earlier about utility. Being useful is really good in music. If you're useful, people will bring you to camp.
I agree. They will give you an endowment. You should be doing something that needs to be done, not just some glory, you know.
Well, you can do it all. You can have a portfolio. But David said, I got this music. And then I also premiered a concerto by Robert Cookson, who wrote a solo guitar piece, which was a real pretzel bender. Then he wrote a guitar concerto, which I read once and played once and deserves more performance. But it was very playable, very enjoyable, very Bartok and like rhapsodic. And it was a concerto in one movement. And I feel like I dropped the ball on that because I couldn't produce more performances. But what I could do was play David's music. So two full CDs. And the cool thing about that is you're following in a tradition of Bream. You know, let's put out some new stuff. And I love Havanas. And this hybrid Eastern influence is just so interesting personally. So recording CDs where someone else is in the booth and saying what to do, that's the only way I can record. Many people record their own CDs, you know, like your experience is that I don't edit my own stuff. I can't. There's no way I would ever finish an edit. If I was in charge of editing my own thing, I would never be happy with submitting anything ever. I have to delegate. There's no way.
Yeah, no, it sucks. I mean, I look back on that one that came out recently and the recording quality just, you know, it's just like, it's just not there. And it's like, it's heartbreaking because you're like, do I go back and re-record it? Well, no, of course not. You know, just the act of getting something online and getting it on Spotify and making somebody make the cover for you and doing all that. You're just like, yeah, you can't start that over. So it is, that's, I think it was somebody when I came out with that, it's just like, he's like, yeah, I get so nervous about releasing something. Cause it's like, it's that's it. Like then you're done with it. But it's sort of like, that's always been my attitude for better or for worse. And I think some of my albums do suffer from a lot of like things that if I had just waited and been a little bit more patient, you know, they could have been better. But I also look at like, you know, like a situation you've been in where there's like a little bit of like, you're like, I don't want to release this right now. It can't happen right now. And then 10 years pass. And so it's both kind of are rough. And we're both people that are working without a lot of support, at least as solo guitarists. Like there's not a lot of people clamoring to get their hands on a new album from me. So this is all just done. It's a labor of love and it's really hard to justify it during the day, you know, cause you're really busy and you know, when kids are involved, you can throw your passions at that during the summer. Like that's all I do. I don't do any guitar at all, which was never the case before a couple of years ago, but that's what it takes to really make a program tick and move. And so sometimes I'm taken away from it.
Well, you know, a counter to that is the idea of seasons. We're back at pitching. I guess MLB's in a lockout still. You know, the idea of what do you do seasonally? Do you take on new rep and document it and record it? Are you taking on a rep that you can play and record this season is a question. Because the elephant in the room is that the classical guitar is a prepared instrument. This was my pitfall, my advantage in New York was that I, you know, if you can read fly shit off a wall, get him in the gig. He can play the part. Right. Is it supported? How's his pinky flare? Is the tone good? No, it's Mike. Doesn't matter. So circumstance is an issue. So if you can read it and play it right now, or am I going to have to finger this 14 times and come back? And then like, what's the path forward? That's a huge issue with producing things seasonally that fit like a glove that you feel good about recording. And That's, I've got one for you coming up 2022. I have to record it. And then, I've got a score for you that speaks to this perfectly. And we'll have to follow up on it because I think sometimes
something you can do. Themselves. Yeah. Something you can do. That's true. I do get into that pickle right now. You know, it's like, I wrote a piece recently that's very fast. It's very challenging. And I'm just like, oh, I'm in a corner now. It's like, I can't quite execute it the way that I want to execute it all the way through, you know?
And so
I'm like,
you have to battle, right? You have to bring it up and incubate it and then come back to it and gestate it.
In the meantime, develop some other skills or whatever. But it's tough. I just got offered a gig on the 18th for a family of people that I love. I teach the dad, and he is actually an adult that I think is a great player and a joy to teach. Very rare situation. And I've taught his kid for like 4 or 5 years. So they want me to play on the 18th. And I'm just like, I don't have standard rep right now. I got about 45 minutes of original material. That's just where I am.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if I was going to play that gig, I would have to like stop what I'm doing, pick up a bunch of those old tangos and stuff and dust them off. And that would be like the next 2 weeks of my life, you know? And it's just like, I'm just like, I had to turn it down. I was like, I'm unavailable for that. Like, you know, I'm not going to play 40 minutes of music for 2 hours. You know, at this thing. So yeah, it is. It's kind of like having to say no, you know, because like you said, you know, we get in those situations, especially at school and especially at Manus, man, we were being told all the time, you got to do this, you got to do that. And it's like, well, where'd all that go? You know, I'm just being a yes man all the time. I mean, it wins you favors with some people, but I don't know. I mean, I like having time to develop this as an art, you know?
Well, to be able to say no means that you can have integrity. And there are worse things than being alone, which is what Bukowski would said. But then you come out of school and if you don't get known and seen, then you have this like inverse relationship. But Bill Evans also said it, another Manus alum, also said it quite nicely. Wow. He said, yeah, he studied theory and we found his report cards at school. So proof.
What did Bill Evans get? Probably pretty good. He's a pretty straight ahead player.
Theory was
good. Sober in his approach.
Theory was good, didn't stay sober, but his comment was, you know, sharpen the blade, practice your craft in his autobiography, he talks about being in a closet somewhere, you know? So what he's saying is be your best version. And when they need you, when utility arises, they will open that door and they should be amazed. Now that is exactly what you got to do, but good luck with that tall challenge. It's only for the crazies. So I'm back to sharpening those blades in a way that I'm completely liberated from all those horrible fingerings that someone said, I do it, you do it. Well, we have different hands, genius. So like maybe we don't have the same fingerings. Also, I'd love to have a doctorate program, examine the techniques of Soar, Giuliani, Yobe, and find out where the overlaps and non-overlaps are, because they're totally different players, totally different right hands. Villalobos too. They all have different skill sets. Like those things don't overlap the way violin does. Violin goes, your spiccato, blah, blah, blah. Your bowing, blah, blah, blah. Like you need to have these essential skills down. Guitar, it's like, good luck. Like how's your five finger tremolo? How's your counterpoint skill? How's your blazing IM scale? Do they overlap? And like with Soar versus Yobe, what would that look like? And what I'm saying is I call it a prepared instrument because you have to prepare your rep and look at the pros.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
Well, they keep their rep. You know, some people haven't changed their rep since 1985. You know why?
Yeah.
Because learning new music's a bitch.
It's the worst, dude. It's the worst. I'm trying to learn some Dale Kavanaugh right now. And it's like, I'm just great like, stuff. I haven't learned like real stuff in a while. And I'm like, oh, this is, And I have that thing where if I'm teaching something to somebody, I can basically sight read it. Like, but if I'm playing it, it's like it takes me an hour or two to get through like two or three lines and like really nail it.
But there's so many questions. I mean, there's so many approaches. Like,
yeah.
There's yeah. so it's a field for sure.
Well, you know what? It looks like we're getting on with the day now, aren't we? What do you have planned for the rest of your day after this, Mr. Paul?
It's Wednesday. So
it's Christmas time, you know, busy time of year.
Yeah, I think the dog needs some walking. Now I've got already you got? Your podcast can't see it, but you know, I've invested in my nail care station. So
oh wow.
You know, I've got my sandpaper, my magnifying lens, and I take extreme prejudice with all things nail. I stuff.
Well,
my
let
gloves.
Me see. Your nails look a little long, right? Is that right to me? Do they?
Well, it's
no,
all
they're
about
the same. We got
it's
the same.
It's all about yeah, where you look. And you've got natural nails. These
I do
days.
Have. Yeah, I do. Well, did I have ping pong balls when I was with you?
Yeah.
Did I have all ping pongs?
Yeah.
No.
For 2 years, I think Masters 2004.
God, was that true?
2002, 2003.
There's no way. Did yeah, I really do that?
I think
That's
they
embarrassing.
Were. It was super consistent. I just fear, I'm just like, now that I'm back in the saddle, yeah. I'm extremely invested yeah. in hitting my hours, you know, 2 hours at least, just living the alternation life.
Yeah.
I just am so completely concerned about being set back because of my tips. So I'm super proactive about their care, which means moisturizing a variety of ways and
very ways. Yeah.
And the side care. So I just use this magnifying lens, and then I've got my six levels of sandpaper and my glass file, which I find cuts very, very clean.
Yeah. You gotta have the glass file for the glass stuff. That's the way to go. Otherwise it wears down and it just turns into a pile of mud.
And no one cares about our nails and they hate them. And that's, but I say, but it brought me to this point, like it did serve me. So I'm just very grateful for them. And I'm very careful.
You keep being careful. And I'm real proud of all the work that you've done down there. You know, it's amazing when I got to see you with all those pros and you just holding it down, because when I met you, you know, you were you were like 18.
I didn't wear cologne. That was the first thing you said to me in our rehearsal.
Cologne?
Was like, no,
cologne. So, I never wore cologne.
No, so Brett was sat next to me in rehearsal.
It, first of all, it's 20 years ago now. It's 20 years 20 ago
years
for
ago.
Real.
2002.
20 years ago for real. Yeah.
20 years ago, I was sat on
Spring
guitar
2002.
Four. Yeah, I was on guitar four with Brett, and he said, "You can sit next to me, but you don't wear any cologne or anything, right? I hate that shit." That
Did
was like
I say
the first.
That?
Yeah, it was the first thing Brett said to me, and I was like, "No yeah. cologne here, boss. We're good."
When are we going to hang out again?
I got to get you.
You got to get me over there. I got to go
yes.
down to Philly.
I'm going to get you an Amtrak. Hope you like Acela. Come on down.
Well, Polly, we'll talk more. I'm going to eat a sandwich and take a nap.
Ciao, Brett.
That was my time with Paul. I hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you go to brettwilliamsmusic.com. That's brettwilliamsmusic.com and donate to the show. If you would like your project to be featured, please email me, brett@brettwilliamsmusic.com. I can throw in a few words, you can even come on and be interviewed for a short segment that goes into the intro. That's Brett, B-R-E-T, @brettwilliamsmusic.com for more information on that. And donate to the show. And I'll talk to you guys after the new year. Happy New Year. Happy holidays.